Today we're talking about what you can and can't say and do on the public airwaves. Saucy sitcoms, reality TV, and shock jock radio sometimes seem to be in a race to the edge of acceptability. To many people, the current restrictions seem prudish. To many others, smut and obscenity are out of control. To some degree, the debate is about language, the famous seven dirty words. Using current guidelines, the Federal Communications Commission recently declined to punish broadcasters after rock star Bono used the F-word in an awards program, ruling that the celebrity's intent was neither scatological nor prurient. FCC Commissioner Michael Powell wants to change the guidelines to bar that and a few other choice words. So do some members of Congress, and they want to give the FCC power to levy fines 10 times bigger than they are now. In a broader sense, the debate is over the definition of indecency, and it's about the right to free expression protected by the First Amendment. Later on this hour, the remarkable career of Mike Mansfield, who rose from the mines of Montana to become majority leader of the United States Senate and ambassador to Japan. But now, if you think there is too much indecency on the airwaves, how would you improve the situation without harming free speech? And if you think the situation is fine as it is, what do you say to your concerned countrymen? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Earlier today, the House of Representatives held hearings on what's called the Clean Airwaves Act. Frank Ahrens was there for the Washington Post. He's their reporter on the FCC, and he joins us from the Post's offices in downtown Washington. And nice to have you back on the show.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Good to be here.
To start with, what is the proposal that's being introduced in Congress?
Well, there's a couple things going on. Essentially, there is a bill that would, as you said, would increase the FCC's ability to fine. Right now, the FCC can only fine $27,500 for each item that is considered indecent in a broadcast over the air on radio or television. And this bill would up that by 10 times, taking it to $275,000, which some people still think is not high enough to sufficiently put a bite on the huge media conglomerates like Time Warner and Viacom. Elsewhere, there is another representative has put out a bill that would essentially – he's listed about, I think, 9 dirty words and phrases that would essentially, if you said them, would automatically bring a fine.
It's a remarkable piece of legislation to read, in fact.
And it's something that really can't be printed in the newspaper. It has to be described in the most kind of oblique terms. But the point is that probably will not stand up constitutionally.
So in brief, it's George Carlin plus the words that we're talking about.
George Carlin supersized.
That's right. Now, there's a separate question in front of the FCC.
Well, yeah, the whole issue of what Bono said on the Golden Globe Awards a year ago when he exclaimed after winning an award, this is really effing brilliant. And the FCC Enforcement Bureau worked within their very tight guidelines and ruled that in this instant that word was not indecent, which prompted a firestorm of criticism, controversy, and mockery on shows such as South Park on Comedy Central, which used the S word, with a teacher telling the kids, you can use this as an adjective but not as a noun. The government says it's okay.
Now, Chairman Powell has called upon his colleagues to reconsider that.
Correct. The 5-member FCC commission can overturn by vote any of the agency rulings. And he said at a press club luncheon, I guess a week or so ago, that the thing that boils him the most is when he hears people say, well, the FCC says it's okay. The FCC does not say it's okay. He said emphatically. And it's likely that's probably going to pass the commission 5-0.
Now, as we look ahead to this measure in Congress, is there much support for it, do you think?
I think there is a lot of support to increase the fines, to give the FCC some more teeth. And also, the way the FCC works now is that they fine for, like, say, on your show, if you said the F word 15 times, imagine, that you could be fined for one instance. You would get one $27,500 fine. There is a lot of motivation not only on the FCC commission,
I'm not sure Congress. Unemployment insurance would pay what the FCC would fine me, but go ahead.
Well, wait until you hear the next thing. The new idea, and this is included, I think, in one of the bills, would fine you $27,500 or maybe $275,000 for each utterance, each of those 15 times.
Now, there is an example just the other day of a radio station, I think, down in Florida, which was given successive fines.
Right. There is a shock jock who works in Florida whose name is Clem, Todd Clem. He goes by Bubba the Love Sponge, and he's a morning shock jock, and he was cited for 26 different violations on four radio stations in, I believe, 2001. And again, it poses a challenge as a newspaper writer when writing about these fines and trying to describe exactly what he said and put it in a family newspaper.
It didn't concern, it wasn't an issue about dirty words, I don't think, but rather dirty deeds.
Allow me to read perhaps the paragraph I am most proud of in my journalism history. On July 19th, 2001, Clem's show featured skits in which Scooby-Doo advises Shaggy to perform a sexual act to earn money to buy crack. It is asserted that Fat Albert was killed in a drive-by shooting, George Jetson's misadventures with a malfunctioning sexual device are detailed, and Alvin the Chipmunk's inability to mate is lamented.
Okay. They print that in the Washington Post, do they?
How much fun was that to write?
And there was another recent fine, and this involved a television station in San Francisco. And I was tell us about it, but it was also reading about it was just the second time any television station had ever been fined. But go ahead.
And in fact, the first time one in the continental U.S. had been fined for indecency, one in Puerto Rico had been. This was concerned two performers in an off-Broadway show called Puppetry of the Penis. And I really don't have to describe what their act is. And they were on a TV show in the morning news, and one of them, their shtick is they wear capes, and one of them briefly exposed himself.
And the station was fined over there, a very brief exposure, exactly, as you find.
Right.
So is the FCC, is this evidence of them being more active in enforcement of late?
I'm always hesitant to write that. In fact, I started to write that in my lead yesterday, saying something like the FCC is responding to criticism, blah, blah, blah. But I thought, nah, that's not right for me to say. I don't know that for sure. The FCC, like every single bureaucracy, moves at its own pace. Now, granted, the top level are political appointments and they feel political heat, but most of this grunt work happens on the bureau, on the agency level far below, and that's why the wheels turn, and they turn sometimes very slowly.
What's the next step?
I think the next step is this bill is going to get through Congress, the one that ups the fines by tenfold. I think the FCC is seriously going to consider fining for each utterance of an indecent word as opposed to just the entire show. And I think that there's going to be some pretty intense lobbying from the major broadcast corporations like NBC and CBS. In fact, some of their heads had told me that last week to try to make sure that their airwaves, as they think, are not overregulated.
Frank Ahrens, thanks very much.
Terrific. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Frank Ahrens is a reporter who covers the FCC for the Washington Post, and he joined us from their offices in downtown D.C. And now here with us from his office on Capitol Hill is Representative Lamar Smith, a Republican of Texas, and he is a sponsor of one of the pieces of legislation and the author of the other that we were talking about. And Congressman, good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Neil, good to be with you and your listeners as well.
Currently, as we heard in that conversation with Frank Ahrens, the FCC fine for an obscenity offense is around $27,000. You want that 10 times bigger. Why?
That's correct. Well, first of all, let me just correct that. The fine can be up to $27,000. It's not an automatic $27,000. There is some leeway there. The reason for increasing the fines tenfold is twofold. First, that is what Sherman Powell recommended and suggested, and we think it's good to take him up on his suggestion. And the second is to really come up with a fine structure that would be a deterrent to individuals who might just say, a wealthy entertainer might say, hey, I can get $27,000 worth of free publicity by saying the word and becoming notorious because of it. And so we really want to have the fines large enough, still with some flexibility, so that it would deter individuals from either offensive actions or offensive words and using them at all.
Mm-hmm. Is that, as we also heard from Frank Ahrens, is even a tenfold increase going to be enough to deter the media giants?
Well, it's more than just a start. I think it will be a deterrent in combination with bad publicity. And after all, we ought to remember that, you know, a huge majority of the American people are offended by hearing certain words on TV or on the radio. They worry about their children, and these words, I would say, violate community standards of decency. And I think that what 90% of the American people would say, we ought not have our children be exposed to these offensive words on TV or on the radio. And so with that kind of public support for saying certain words are offensive or certain fines ought to be increased, I think that it may well happen. And regardless of what some of the large media organizations think or feel, I think it will have an impact.
Let's get some callers involved. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And we'll begin with James, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
In Portland, we have a small community subscription alternative radio station that presents not mainstream media and a lot of alternative programming, including alternative radio, which NPR does as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot of what would be controversial or colorful kinds of programming, and one of these times 10 fines would take our station off the air completely, and it's all public subscription. So it's, you know, what might work for the giant is not going to be good at all for the local alternative expression medium, which, you know, is the little guy getting stepped on by the tools that are equipped for the big guy.
Congressman Smith?
I'd be happy to respond. First of all, there's a way to avoid being put out of business by a large fine, and that's not to allow the words to be used or spoken. And that's the whole point. But it's not to put people out of business. It's to encourage the media, whatever their size, not to use the words to begin with. And even though this may be an alternative radio station, it's probably just as easy for a child to click on the radio or push the button that turns on the radio and listen to it as any other station, and that's really who I think we're trying to protect as much as anything else. And as long as the FCC licenses the alternative radio stations, then they, in fact, have every right and responsibility to maintain what would be considered, I think, community standards and want to protect the children or even adults from hearing these offensive words.
Would the punishment be set to fit the crime, or would the punishment be set to fit the alleged offender? And in this case, the difference between a clear channel or a community radio station in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. I don't think you can sort of get into, you know, one fine for one kind of station and another fine for another kind of station, either on the basis of the kind of programs they carry or on the basis of their size. I think that would be unworkable. I think you just have to have one fine and to the extent that it's, the point is to deter, not to punish. And it sounds like, and I think it would be effective in accomplishing that goal.
Nevertheless, and James, thanks very much for the call. Nevertheless, the resources of a Viacom or a Clear Channel, they may absorb a $300,000 fine and look at the publicity as a positive, while that station in Portland might be off the air.
Right, and as I said a while ago, there is flexibility, and so it may well be that the FCC would say this is the first offense by a small radio station that is an alternative radio station, and so maybe this time it'll be 1,000 with the warning that next time it really will be 27,000 or 275,000.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas to the big guy who might abuse the rule and have 20 people say 20 different words, then you can hit them a little bit harder. But that's why the fines are up to, not an automatic mandate.
Congressman Smith is going to stay with us to answer a couple more of your calls when we come back from the other side of the break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking about his proposed Clean Airwaves Act, and we'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about attempts to change how the FCC regulates decency on the public airwaves. Our guest is Congressman Lamar Smith, Republican of Texas, who's backing two bills in the House aimed at strengthening the FCC's hand. Of course, you're invited to join our conversation. 800-989-8255 or email us, totn@npr.org. And the other piece of legislation, the Clean Airwaves Act, Congressman Smith, you wrote that, and it lists the language that you want to absolutely bar.
That's correct. There's eight words and phrases we'd like to add to a short list that already exists saying that other words are patently offensive and should not be used. And these words, I think, are generally just as offensive, and we'd like for the FCC to rule that these words should be prohibited as well, and then add them to the list for which media organizations could be fined if they allowed these words to be used.
In any context.
And by the way, to give credit where credit is due, I did not actually, I was an original co-sponsor of this legislation. It was actually written by Doug Ossie, a congressman from California, but I was happy to be the other co-sponsor when it was introduced.
Well, thank you for that correction. The bill, as you say, deals specifically with vocabulary, but as I'm sure you know, many parents also question content
right.
of broadcasts. We have a clip here from the television show Clueless, which is a spinoff from the movie. It aired on ABC and UPN, in which two teenage characters argue about their sexual experience.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes, I do.
Unbelievable. You're a virgin, too.
Oh, please.
You are.
Not.
Are.
Not.
Are.
Not.
Are.
Okay, I are.
Am.
So what? I cannot believe Dion Davenport is going to lose it before I do.
None of the words that would be on anybody's list in that skit or in any other of the many sitcoms that you see on television every night.
Right.
But if that kind of content is going out over the airwaves, isn't a few words here or there kind of closing the barn door after the cows escaped?
Let's just say we're starting where we can, and one of the reasons we had to be specific in the legislation, as offensive as those words are, is to not be unconstitutionally vague. And so the more specific you are, the better chance you have of being upheld in court. And that was one reason we were specific in the bill. But as you just pointed out, there are going to be incidents that may or may not be able to be regulated, and that's just the way it is. And sometimes there are exceptions to the rule, or there are loopholes. And what you just simply try to do is close as many of them as possible. But I think, generally speaking, we're targeting the most offensive words that almost no one would want to have broadcast, say, during family hour up until 10 p.m. at night. And that's a good place to start. Sometimes you just can't worry about all the other innuendos.
That sound you heard in the background was the buzzer in the House of Representatives that summons representatives to a vote. Do I have time for one more question?
Yes, and you were exactly right. We do have a vote coming up.
And that question is, there are people in the broadcast community who say, look, we have to compete with people who are on basic cable, where much more explicit than we are, and they have to compete with paid cable paid movies that are even vastly more explicit.
Yep.
How are we supposed to compete in this?
That's all true, and the others cannot be regulated because they're not licensed by the FCC. And again, you regulate and prohibit what you can, even if you are not able to prohibit everything that you want. And, this is, as I say, it's a start. And also, maybe by setting the example, there will be some public pressure brought on the cables and some of the other broadcasts that cannot be regulated to clean up their act a little bit. So don't underestimate that possibility as well.
Congressman Smith has to leave to conduct the people's business. Thank you very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Republican Lamar Smith is a representative from Texas, and he joined us today from his office on Capitol Hill. We're going to continue discussing this issue. The laws Congress struggles with today are themselves product of a long and often torturous evolution in broadcast standards. And joining us now to talk about how we got here and give some context to the current battles is Jeremy Lipschultz. He's professor of communications at the University of Nebraska in Omaha and the author of Broadcasting Indecency, FCC Regulation and the First Amendment. He's with us from the Warehouse Production Studio in Omaha. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, glad to be here.
Now, when we talk about obscenity on the airwaves, people often refer to the seven dirty words that started it all. What was the actual case?
Well, that was the case called Pacifica, which in the late 1970s evolved through the courts and ultimately to the Supreme Court and left us really where we are today. It's the case that the Supreme Court, in a very split decision, said that indeed indecency was a separate category for the broadcast medium that could be regulated.
Then in 1989, National Public Radio actually sparked the case that modified that ruling. The network aired a story by reporter Michael Schuster, which included tape of mobster John Gotti threatening an underling. Now, we have a clip of this story in which we've bleeped out the curse words. The original aired with the profanities intact.
This is an excerpt from a wiretap, one conversation Gotti had with an associate some years ago. Gotti's threats are extremely profane.
I need an example. Don't you be the example, you understand me?
John,
listen, I called your house 5 times yesterday. Now, if your wife thinks you a husky or she's a husky and you're going to disregard my phone calls, I'll blow you and that house up.
I never disregard anything you...
Well, you call your wife up and you tell her.
Now, Jeremy Lipschultz, take us through what resulted when a listener wrote the FCC to complain about that.
Well, you make a good point about complaints, because something that needs to be understood about this whole problem is it's a complaint-driven system. And so what that means, and what I've talked about previously in the book and elsewhere, is that it means that a single listener can make a complaint to the FCC. And in fact, if you go to their website, there are instructions about what you need to provide the FCC with, a tape and normally documentation of the broadcast. That's what they respond to, and that's what happened in this case. The difference in the NPR case was that it happened in a bona fide newscast, and it had news value.
Curiously, I was actually the executive producer of All Things Considered, which was where that particular tape aired, when it aired, and was asked to obviously clear that. And people have asked, didn't we cut anything out of that broadcast? And in fact, yes, I replied. I cut several words out myself, the word mother, repeatedly.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because normally the FCC makes a distinction between repeated use of profanity and a passing reference, and sometimes between a live broadcast and a taped broadcast. But in this case, you know, there's a real distinction, and it's a distinction that we should see broadly in this whole issue, which is that we have to recognize, Congressman Smith and others have to recognize, that we live in a free society, and free speech is fundamental to that.
There's another point, and that was the point as to why we did not edit out the words or bleep out the words in that broadcast originally. If you just heard that tape, it's pretty comical with all those bleeps in it. Nevertheless, what we were trying to do was get the listeners some idea of the true character of John Gotti, then known as the Teflon Don for his ability to fend off accusations and portray his true character as a thug. And that's what we tried to get across in that tape, and which would not have been able to do in any other way. But then moving on. This issue really got a lot of attention after Howard Stern started racking up some fines in the early 1990s, and what his company just paid them.
Yeah, I feel like this is deja vu all over again or something, because 15 years ago when I began to look at this, we were almost at the same point. It culminated with Howard Stern's Infinity Broadcasting being fined a total of $1.7 million. And now we're back here again with the regulators and members of Congress saying, if we only just raised the fines, if we only just made the penalties higher, this would just all go away. It didn't go away. It didn't go away because the culture has changed, use of language has changed, and we can't really define indecency.
Let's get some listeners involved. Tom is with us on the line from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I do think that something at this point should be done. When the social infrastructure of democracy was created in this country, I think it was created by people that had high standards. And I think that then we discovered that this infrastructure could be used for good purposes or bad purposes. And I think at this point the two enemies here are, I call it immoral insurgency or government over censorship. I think these are the two things that we should stay away from. But what I find is that the immoral insurgents do what they do, and then they hide behind the same infrastructure that the people who have good taste use. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to make sure that the immoral insurgents and the government don't overstep their bounds. But I think that at this point, it's very important now, because the balance is totally gone. It's filth, and I think that something should be done. But I do think that we should be very careful that we don't let the government also go too far in controlling this.
I think you've hit the point of it, Tom. It is a space on an arc, and where you come down, it's a very difficult issue.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Did you want to come in on that, Jeremy Lipschultz?
Well, yeah, I wanted to say a couple things. One is, this is a political year. This is a presidential election year, and these things are kind of cropping up a little bit, I think, in this context. But also, this, I've looked at the bills that have been introduced, and they fly in the face. The listing of words and the idea of a ban at all times of the day, these things will not hold up under the existing precedents in the court, where we have channeled indecency to late night hours when children are not likely to be in the audience. But I think there's another point that hasn't been brought out, which is that you heard the congressman say it, we're out to protect children, and even surprisingly said we're out to protect adults. There's no legal rationale for that one. Protect them from what?
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Tina, who's with us from Conway, Arkansas.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I am a broadcaster myself and the daughter of a BBC broadcaster, both television and radio. And my poor father would be rolling in his grave, probably with laughter, at the very thought of introducing even further restrictions to freedom of speech and to open-mindedness. In Europe, they're far less, can I say, anally retentive on the air?
I think so.
And, they're not a bunch of depraved people. And I really object to government telling me how I should watch and listen. And I don't think it's their business, quite frankly, to over-regulate. And parents have a responsibility to take care of their own children. If their children don't want to watch, well, they shouldn't be watching after 10 o'clock at night.
We have an email that is somewhat along those same lines from Andrew in Las Vegas. The remote control, he writes, is a great tool. People should learn to use it. The government should not be the great insulator. The government, he also adds, should have better things to do. But Jeremy Lipschultz, where does the government's authority to do this arise, and is it a violation of the First Amendment?
Our legal structure, I think, carved out a very narrowly tailored restriction on obscenity as one class of speech that could be regulated in this way. It didn't do it in the indecency case, but where we've gone wrong regulatorily is that the FCC mixes and confuses the idea of indecency and obscenity, so that you get into these concerns about profane language or passing references or the way people speak. So I think it's all fairly problematic, and if you look at the recent Supreme Court cases since Pacifica, you see that in every other context, the court gives more deference to the First Amendment and free expression. The question is, and they've opened the door to this, will we come back to broadcasting and re-examine it?
We're speaking with Jeremy Lipschultz, talking about obscenity over the airwaves. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. With us now is a man who made a career making difficult decisions along these lines. Ted Cordes is former vice president in charge of broadcast standards and practices for NBC. He retired earlier this month, but kindly agreed to join us this afternoon from his home in Southern California. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil.
Tell us about broadcast standards departments. Where do you come into the process?
Well, we come into the process from the very beginning. We work with only entertainment programming. We do not deal with news or sports, other than an advisory capacity sometimes. But we get in on the entertainment program from the beginning. We work with the producers and the programming department on concepts. We look at scripts. We discuss changes that we feel are necessary with producers. And then we look at the final product in rough cut form and deal with any editing that we feel necessary.
Has what program producers can get away with, has that changed over the years?
Oh, it's constantly changing. I mean, we reflect the nation. We don't lead anybody. We don't consider ourselves nannies anymore. We reflect what the public, what is current in the public. Producers are always trying to stretch the envelope. That's part of the creative function to do that. That's the only way the world advances, actually, is by stretching and trying new things. And we're influenced by everything that goes on. We're influenced by competitive forces. We're influenced by what goes on in current events, the news, things that are discussed in the public eye. For example, the Clinton-Monica situation changed television enormously because things were discussed on the news that had never been dealt with before, and people became accustomed to hearing these subjects. So now you'll hear jokes about similar subjects that would never have been considered before that time.
And I assume when you talked about the competition, a big change happened when cable came in.
Well, that's true, but it's a different world, really. I mean, we're governed by affiliates and advertisers, which the cable, they don't care about this. We obviously are in the same, we're in the same bailiwick. I mean, we're looking for the same audience. So there is a degree of competition, but I really think, I've got to say, my feeling is that it's what is current in the world, and news and sensitivities that the world has, that the public has, governs our decisions a great deal.
As we heard earlier in a conversation with Washington Post reporter Frank Ahrens, there have only been two fines ever levied against television stations, one in Puerto Rico a while ago and one more recently in San Francisco. In a way, you have to say, does that suggest that you guys have all been erring on the side of caution?
Oh, we're very. I think we're very conservative. We're far more conservative than the cable networks, and we are conservative. The current situation right now about the profanity that was used a year ago on the Golden Globes is a result of it was an accident. Nothing was intentional. The word was not approved when Bono did his acceptance speech. It was a live broadcast. And his word, this is the current bone of contention, his word was said inadvertently. And for the live broadcast on the East Coast, it did go out, but then we corrected it, and on all the tape delay, everywhere else in the rest of the country, it was obliterated. So none of this is ever intentional. We are conservative.
We're talking with Ted Cordes, who recently resigned from NBC as part of their broadcast standards division. And we're also speaking with Jeremy Lipschultz from the University of Nebraska, who's a historian of obscenity over the airwaves. We're going to wrap up our conversation on this subject when we come back from a short break. And then we're going to be talking with Don Oberdorfer about his new biography of Senator Mike Mansfield, who rose from the mines of Montana to be majority leader of the U.S. Senate. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, it's a hobby or a passion that grabs everyone from millionaire musicians to neighborhood postmen. We'll take a look inside the world of art collecting tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're discussing the difficult decisions broadcast networks and stations face when they have to balance decency standards with creative expression and market pressures. With us is Ted Cordes, who made a job of tough choices in his former position as vice president in charge of broadcast standards and practices at NBC. Also with us, Professor Jeremy Lipschultz, who teaches communications at the University of Nebraska in Omaha. And let's get another caller on the air. This is Paul, who joins us on the line from Venice, California.
Hi. It seems like the greedy old party has been taken over by the religious right. You know, they love free market, but not in this case. I know how to turn off my TV. They don't need to turn it off for me.
And this is obviously in terms of the experiences, but you know, there are an awful lot of material on television that people do find offensive, Paul.
No doubt. I used to work on Special Victims Unit and South Park, and today I don't watch them. I mean, but so they lose my advertising dollar. They still have a million other people that watch it. And I always ask the producers, people pay to watch somebody get stabbed 127 times? Somebody wants to see it, not me.
Ted Cordes, at least one of those programs is on the network you used to work for, and that's the SUV. It's on NBC, Law & Order SUV. Explicit broadcasts like that, not just pushing the edge perhaps on language or on indecency, but certainly on violence, that's something you had to deal with all the time.
Yes, but the Law & Order franchise, SUV included, they are shows that some people like, some people don't, obvious, but the ratings, it's an enormously successful franchise, And the Law and Order programs do get audience acceptance. There are people that don't like this subject matter. SUV particularly deals with matters that that could be considered offensive to some people. For that reason, we do observe the rating system. We do put ratings on the front of the show. It's an adult-rated show. It airs late at night. And sometimes when the subject matter gets particularly edgy, we put an advisory on the beginning of the show, alerting viewers that there may be some subject in this that they don't care to see. We respect viewers. We want viewers to make the choice. And we want the audience that accepts the show. We don't want the audience that that doesn't. And so the personal choice is what counts.
Paul, I wonder, when you were working, South Park obviously didn't come under it. That's a cable operation, so standards and practices was not involved there, I guess. But did you have any experience with Mr. Cordes' office at NBC?
Not at NBC for that, but I have to say, you know, South Park's competing for advertising dollars, too, and they just do just fine there. So it isn't advertisers that are backing away from it. The networks self-censor themselves before anybody steps in. And the other thing is, nobody objected when Jack Welch and Fox News threw an election, but were offended when somebody talks about a body part. It's nuts.
Okay, Paul, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And Ted Cordes, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Ted Cordes was the vice president in charge of broadcast standards and practices, I'll get that right, at NBC, and he was kind enough not to pick up on my error. I apologize. It is, of course, Law and Order SVU, not what I called it privately, referring to large vehicles that sometimes drive on the road. And Ted, Jeremy Lipschultz, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Jeremy Lipschultz teaches communications at the University of Nebraska. He joined us from the Warehouse Production Studio in Omaha. He's also the author of Free Expression in the Age of the Internet.